So welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the third paper in the series on the development of vernacular literacy. And join me in welcoming our speaker, our third and final speaker, Catherine Oley, rhymes with ravioli on top, who will be talking about supporting native languages and encouraging early literacy with children's books.
Thank you very much for having me. My name is Catherine Oley. I always have to throw in the ravioli piece because I started my career teaching kindergarten, and that was totally a way to win over kids. So it's not meant to win over you, but I am currently in my second year working in the early childhood program at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. That said, I feel a little bit of like a fish out of water here because I'm coming from an education background. So I very much appreciate all of you allowing me to come here and kind of share what some of my work is. So my goal in coming here today is I wanted to tell you how we, and when I say we, I mean myself and Dr. Mark Condon, are targeting language conservation and early literacy development through a project. This project provides dozens of children's books to families and children and teachers, and right now we're trying to get this library to be available in multiple Alaska Native languages. It is free, it's a free digital library, and so it's, while we're still working on making sure that everybody has that digital access, making sure that there are resources that are available wherever you are is something that was really, really important to us. So just within these short 20 minutes, what I want to do is give you a history of the project, share kind of the process in which the project has developed. I think, especially when I look at Indigenous methodologies, I get very nervous about trying to report on any type of result. Instead, I'd much prefer to report on the process that I'm using so that if someone else wanted to engage in similar work, they've had an idea of some of the ways that have worked and perhaps some of the things that have not worked. I also want to show you what we've created and make some explicit connections between this work and kind of the larger field of language conservation and also early literacy development, and then let you know kind of where my next steps are. And then I'm hoping to spend a lot of time getting some ideas and feedback from all of you to help me improve my work and really become a lot more targeted and specific in how we are trying to achieve some outcomes. So let me tell you about in the beginning. For me, I moved up to Alaska 2 years ago, and I felt this incredible need to kind of become part of the community and give back in a way as much as I could. But I was new, and I wasn't quite sure how to go about that. I was very, very lucky to be able to go to the ICC Educational Symposium in Nome, Alaska. This was put on by our Inuit Circumpolar Council, and they wanted to come up with ways that we could improve education for all of our Inuit population. So I went there, and what was fantastic is I was an observer, so I sat in the audience and I watched everyone talk, and I just took notes, copious notes about what we could do to improve education outcomes for our young children. And one of the things that came up from one of the students that spoke was that there weren't a lot of materials available within that native language, and that was really a problem for her when she was trying to teach other people, but also just in terms of having materials around. Additionally, I started doing just a lot of reading. I think that's what we all do when we go to a new place. If we can, we talk to people, we read, we try to immerse ourselves as much as we can. So I was looking at testimony from the president of the National Alliance to Save Native Languages. And last April, one of the comments was that to support the programs and meet the linguistically unique educational needs of Native students, while also preserving, revitalizing, and using these students' native languages, they needed access to materials in those native languages, both at home and in the school. And so that's kind of where I started coming about this. There are a lot of problems that do come up when we don't have access to materials. So first of all, it can prevent parents whose first language is not English to not be able to read to their kids in the language that's being really enforced in school. We also know that one of the best indicators of children's success in school is related to how much they've been read to. And then conversely, we also see there's a relationship with higher test scores to the frequency with children read for fun. So there's some real implications there on that early, through that early literacy perspective of not having these materials. The second big consequence to me is that if students are not seeing materials within their own language, they're not seeing that it's valued by other people outside of their own community. And that's something that I felt like maybe I could help make that change and let people know that it really is important to people outside of that community as well. In terms of looking at those needs and trying to come up with a solution, I partnered with Dr. Mark Kaufman, who is the Vice President of Unite for Literacy. So Unite for Literacy is a group that has created a digital library, and they are providing books in as many languages as possible for kids to access for free. Now, these books are definitely, they're easy to read books. I mean, they are intended for young children to be able to read and for their families to be able to read with them. There's currently over 130 books that are listed, and right now they have, I believe, 14 languages, including several books that have been translated into American Sign Language, which is pretty neat. Now, as I went about approaching this with Mark, there was just a couple things that I wanted to keep in mind. And I was just going off some of the components of Gloria Ladson Billings' culturally relevant pedagogy. So some of those components I was keeping in mind as we were approaching this in a really thoughtful manner is that teaching takes place outside of the classroom too. So yes, I wanted to have books that teachers could use within their schools, but I also wanted them to be fun books and things that they would find entertaining and interesting, and that they would actually reference. I also wanted to recognize the fact that students are school dependent. So there is a certain type of language, a certain amount of knowledge and cultural capital that students have to succeed in Western schools. So I wanted to keep that in mind as well to make sure that I was providing the scaffolding that students needed. At the same time, I needed to acknowledge that curriculum is not ideologically neutral. So if they're going to see a book that has certain pictures, and perhaps it has pictures of kids and trees, what was that message that I was giving? If they don't have trees in their own village, but there's pictures of trees within the children's book, or is that giving a message that this is better than not having it? That's something that I was really worried about. And then also just wanting to make sure that my instruction was designed to attend to the context. So making sure that what we were actually going to be translating were things that they could identify with and that really mattered for their community. So let me tell you about the process that kind of went about. The first step was really getting some community buy-in. So the way I started it is I went out to Chibok, Alaska, and was able to work with the Chibok people teaching a teacher education course. There's a great effort right now to make sure that we can help get more people certified so that they can work within schools within their own villages. And so I went out there to teach a class, and I taught family community partnerships. And one of the kind of components of having a really good, strong family community partnership with the school is making sure that you have books that are within languages that everyone can understand. So one of my assignments, and I had choices, so people could choose which of the assignments they wanted to do, 4 out of 6. And one of them was translating, you know, a field trip form into another language, which was really funny because I had 6 students who were Chupik, so they translated into Chupik, and then I had 2 students that I brought with me from Anchorage that didn't know another language, and so I got a field trip permission slip translated into Pig Latin, which was just so not what I was going for, but I appreciated the effort. Anyway, one of the other big activities that I had them do is I went had my students look at Unite for Literacy's website, look at the books, and find books that perhaps they might want to translate, and then we also created lesson plans on how you could use those to teach some other skills within the standardized curriculum. And what happened is all of my students who are Chupik chose to do that activity, and they went through the process of translating it, and at that point I thought, I don't want to just let it go. So I presented them with the option of, do you want to record these? Do we want to make this work that you've done public and make it something that your students can use? And the answer was overwhelmingly yes. So even after having a full day of class, spending 8 hours with me, they went home, they fed their families, and then these students, mothers, women, all came back and then sat in the school with me for 5 hours, going through books, translating them, looking up in their dictionaries which words were which, occasionally arguing over which word was correct and which one was not, and then practicing and then getting in front of the microphone and us actually recording it. And it was a really incredible process, and it was probably the most humbling thing that I've ever done to see all of these women really come together to try to create something for their children and their families and for their classrooms. So I had that community buy-in from them. That's something they wanted to do. And so we've been able to kind of continue that process. the way that once we had that buy-in and they wanted to do it, first they had to choose the books. Like I said, there's over 130 books. They were not gonna choose a book that was, you know, my trip to the Denver Zoo. That didn't have any type of relevance. But they did choose books like, what is orange? What colors do you eat? Tools, bedtime. We had a lot of laughs over the fact when we were doing bedtime, there was the word snuggly. I like to sleep with my snuggly, and how we were gonna translate the word snuggly into Chupik. Obviously, that's not a word that most people use. So we had a lot of laughs over with that. So we chose the books that they felt were most comfortable and most relevant for their own schools. We translated them, like I said, there was a very rigorous process of double checking them. And then we recorded them. We sent them to Unite for Literacy, and Mark was able to help us get them all uploaded. And once they were uploaded, we tried to check to make sure that there was still some there was a lot of accuracy. And then the teachers are starting to use them. Now in Chibok, we had a really easy way to kind of incorporate them into the schools because they have a Chibok immersion wing within their school. So that's already kind of part of the culture that is there. It's not necessarily the culture in every place. So I think that for me, it's just making sure the resource is available, and if people choose to use it, then they've got that there. It's not something that I want to impose on anyone. I just want to make sure that there's access. Now at this point, we've had some really good results, and I've got other groups that would also like to get their books translated into their native language as well. So we've now created, through some generous small grants from our Center for Faculty Excellence at the University of Alaska Anchorage and also from our College of Education, I've been able to pay for translators to get our Chupik library up to 50 books, which is what we're working on. And then we've also started translating into Inupiaq. So right now we've got 25 books in the works there, and my hope is that we can kind of continue that. So let me show you what it looks like when you go to that website. You can see right up here, this is where you get to pick your language. As linguists, you all are probably way more aware of all of the various languages that exist. I look at that and I'm like, I didn't even know some of these languages existed, let alone that it was this huge digital library created there to help maintain the language and teach kids that. And then there's different ways that you can go about and see the organization. So if I wanted to get animals, books on animals, I could click there, or I could just simply go with the Chupik. But let me show you what it looks like if they're trying to, when they navigate it themselves.
Igachta, hari harbu, anat nakitu, adat nakitu, achnat nakitu, amudit nakitu, bibit nakitu, mutuhi kshikit nakitu, 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 damaskuga nakitu.
It was absolutely fascinating to go through that process of translating because there were so many times when I'm like, I think you just said the same word, like twice, and they were like, no, let me explain how they were, you know, how these words differ, and I thought that was really powerful. For me to learn and to really be able to appreciate. So what was the point of doing all of this? Well, I wanted to take that stand of your language is really important and it's valued. And you know, when I look back here and I go and I check the list of languages, I want those languages to be displayed there. I want them to have that equal opportunity. The second thing is I did have two kind of explicit goals as well. I really wanted to help with early literacy. That's one of my areas of specialty. I know that they needed to have that increased access to books and the increased exposure to oral language. So as you noticed, we don't have the written form. Now I have all of the transcriptions that all of our translators did, and we're looking at how we can use those, but we wanted the focus to be on oral language. This is traditionally, these have traditionally been oral languages, and that's what we wanted the focus to be. we also felt that this was a really nice way of connecting words with picture cues. So you can hear it in English, you can see it in the picture, you can hear it in your native language, and that's really a nice piece for comprehension support. The second piece is we wanted to explicitly help support the preservation of native languages, so we wanted to increase the resources. We wanted authentic narrations, like the people who are reading these are from the community. So kids are hearing their teachers saying this, or they're hearing their next door neighbor saying it. And I think that's just a really valuable piece. And then we also wanted to promote the use of these types of resources within the homes. So by making them digital, making them free, they can access them by their phones. If they have internet connection, they can also access them that way. And then we're lucky because many of our schools are really well-funded and well-equipped with technology. So that's something that we can also use. In terms of how we're looking at moving things further, one of our strategies is that we're going to try to localize the books. So it's a little bit funny because when you think about illustrated children's books that everybody can use, there's some like ideas of, oh, well, I can show a picture of a kid sitting under a tree. Well, in Chudai, we don't have a lot of trees, so it doesn't make sense for all of the pictures to necessarily show things that they might not have access to. So we're going to do some of our own photography, localize them, and then we're also going to start printing these out and then adding in what the written version is as well. Now that has been requested by Head Start because they would like their students and the families to be able to really bond together and use that. And I think that's really important too. Not everyone has access to the internet. We think that we need to have hard copies available to them. So I appreciate that we were able to start with the digital ones simply because it's free and that's what we had that was available to us. But if the community wants to have them in hard copy, then absolutely, we're gonna do whatever we can to get them in hard copy for them. We're also going to try to increase that depth within the library. So instead of just 50 out of 130, perhaps if there's other books that seem of, like they would be of interest, trying to get those translated as well. And then expanding the breadth of the library. We have a lot of really wonderful, valuable languages in Alaska, and I know across the world. For me, I'm just focusing in on the one state because that's where I feel like I really need to represent and dedicate my time. But I think that we really need to get these books translated into other languages as well, and that would be a really valuable contribution. The only reason it hasn't been done so far is because I felt fairly strongly that I wanted to be able to pay the translators for that important work they're doing. So while a lot of times people are doing this through all volunteer, and like I know the entire, all of the books that were translated into Turkish were translated by university students who did it for a project for a class. I've been trying to make sure that I can provide translators with funds because I want them to know how much I appreciate what they're doing. And then the last piece that I'm really looking to get some input on is how do I start researching what kind of effects these books may or may not have. And they might not have any type of effect, and maybe it's completely symbolic in just making sure that the language is represented there and they can hear it. But I think there will be some effects, whether it has to do with early literacy, whether it has to do with language conservation, whether it has to do with strengthening families or strengthening identity. I think that that might come about. And I think at this point, I know that I need to venture into that, especially because if I want to raise more funds for more of these projects to happen, I mean, people who give funds, they want to have some answers, they want to have some products, they want to have some research, and I totally appreciate that. But doing it in a really culturally sensitive way where I'm not saying, you know, like my intention was to provide a service and to provide these resources. My intention was not necessarily to go in and research and study them under a microscope. And I think many of us feel that tension of I want to make sure that I'm doing the research piece, but I also want to make sure that my, you know, that I've got some really natural intention there and that people feel the love and the joy that what we're doing, not I'm going to now sit and write all about you. And so that's where I'm at right now and trying to figure out how I can do that. And I'm hoping that by being at this conference that I can learn from all of you who are already doing some of that in really thoughtful ways that value both what is happening but what this research could possibly lead to in the future. So that said, I'm open to any questions, and I'm also very happy to talk to any of you if you're looking at trying to get your books translated so that there's a digital resource that represents whatever language group you're working with. I'm happy to talk about that as well.
Translation in writing, or will it be instead of English or a dialogue? What will be the
in the books that we are producing that are going to be hardcover, it'll have English written, and then it will also have the native language written underneath it. And so the early literacy piece of part of me is like, oh my gosh, we have to have it there. But I'm also trying to make sure that I take a step back and value the world language piece. Here I can look and it shows you all of the different translations that have been done. Arabic, Burmese, German, Korean, Navajo, Polish. I mean, it's a pretty extensive group. And how it goes about in terms of how these start happening, it's kind of organic. As it might happen through students, it might happen through community members, it might happen at the university level.
Is it like a subscription service though?
Oh no. No, so if you're willing to put in like the time and the elbow grease to like helping get them translated and then getting the narrations recorded, they do the rest.
So is it all the same books that are translated into all these different languages?
Yes.
So who made these books in the first place?
They have several authors that work directly with them. And so their idea was to create really easy to read books that would be especially good for promoting the early literacy piece. So like I said, some of them are not culturally relevant. And that's something that I feel and I worry about a lot. But I also respect the fact that people need to have access to all sorts of cultures and all sorts of pieces of information.
So like somebody would maybe pick out the stories that could be more culturally relevant. I mean, say what is orange or what
yes.
Foods do you eat that are orange, which could apply to anywhere.
Yes, and that's exactly what we did. Like, we put them all out and I said, you choose the ones that you want, that you think is going to be really influential and helpful for you.
Do you know if there's any future plans by United for Literacy to include indigenous stories that come from the culture and maybe include the art from that culture?
You know, we have talked about that a lot because it's something that it's the back and forth that we go. We want to make sure that we've got a resource that can be funded and that can be used by a lot of different people, but we also feel that crunch of it would be really much nicer to have books that are representative from cultures and to also make sure that they've got pictures. And so that's why we've been given permission to localize them ourselves with the hard copies. But because they're trying to hit widespread appeal, I mean, they're trying to hit all of these different language groups, I don't know of any current plans right now to include any of the indigenous stories and indigenous pictures. It's not that they don't value them. I think it's just, to a certain extent, there's a little bit of an efficiency model of how can I keep this free and make sure that I've got a lot of resources.
Yeah. I was wondering if you have explored the idea of we could just sort of make our own story. So we've done a lot of translations in the immersion mm-hmm. schools, and sometimes the language doesn't work or the culture doesn't work, but you get
right.
a better language if you don't translate. But illustrations are hard, right? I mean, they're expensive, mm-hmm. they're hard to get, so.
They are, and there's a lot of different programs that I've used before that other people have used. You know, we've used Blurb, we've used StoryJumper. This was just an idea of having something that was really easily accessible.
Right, so it could be useful, but I'm saying, think they would be open to not translating, but maybe just using the illustrations and doing your own story?
I think that you definitely could. I mean, you don't hear the story unless you click on the button, and that's when the sound comes out. So I think what I'm hearing you say is having the pictures, letting people put in the stories that they would like. Is that right?
Right. So you work with an elder to tell a story around the pictures they see, which would come out different than a translation.
Yes, absolutely. I think that people can use the books however they want to. It's just making sure their access is there.
Yeah, because I think that's kind of like the same thing as I work with a speaker, but we don't work with kids and we don't have that mind to like create our own illustrations and stuff. It'd be nice to be able to, like you said, to have these illustrations available to us and just turn on the microphone so we can see.
Yeah.
Do,
no,
and be able to, you know, because like these, the only problem that I seen was like, they were just full of English words, and in a sense, like, what mom was talking about was like, we're using them in emergency schools, we don't want the English. I mean, we're trying to create a monolingual environment.
Right. And this is just one resource. It's obviously, it's not gonna help all of the different needs that we've got. But I hear what you're saying. I think that there's a lot of value to that. It's a tricky balance in terms of if you offer one resource, are you saying that I don't value another resource? And I don't think that's the desire.
So they're only offered in English, right?
You can listen to the books in whatever languages they're there, and I'm not sure why it's not showing up for me, because I got it pulled up in front of me here. So what was funny when I was in GVAC, some of the translator student, their kids were there helping out, and they wanted to hear the books in Japanese and French. Yes.
I was just wondering about the having the English only, or that the English be the primary language and the hard copy, because I know that this is primarily an oral language, but there's a lot of work that's, or research that's been done about like prestige in a, we're a highly literate society, and these kids, even if, well, especially if English is their first language and they see English written everywhere, there's this like subtle signal that my native language is not prestigious enough, or it's not literate enough, or like there's some, it's a lower level than English. So I wonder about having it be like actually visually lower than English.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm very lucky because Mark allowed me to come to work with him and start developing this within, specifically looking at our Alaska Native languages. But that's a debate that he and I have had many times. And I think it is a really delicate balance of, am I privileging one over the other? And I think from his standpoint, the conversations that he's had with people from community is that the focus has been on that oral language. So like I said, when we create our own books that are gonna be hands-on, we are going to have the print there. That's where I have a little bit of flexibility.
Right, but you're having the print below the English, right? Yes. With the English bigger. Is that what you said?
They're not going to be bigger or smaller. I mean, we'll have the two of them. I mean, I said the word for pink has 14 letters in Chupik, so I would imagine there's gonna be a whole lot more Chupik in English.
Maybe you could have a button where you can turn off the English word, the mm-hmm. written word, and just have the photos and the oral speaker if they wanted, like mm-hmm. you would have a choice there.
Yeah, and that's something that's really especially good for native, for the native speakers. I will say the one benefit is that we've got a lot of teachers who have no idea what the languages are. So there is also a benefit of having the English language there so that the teachers know what's going about and what messages are being communicated. But that would be a really nice option.
You can see.
I really like what you talked about. I especially like the simplicity of the text. I run a Shoney project, and we have 15 children's books that we have produced. Having a simple text for early readers is very important. I want to support that. I was a little concerned about the English part, too. But I see that what we're trying to do is move from this step into something that is even more localized. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So I just thought of this idea. In the summer, when we run the Chupik immersion class for the parents of Head Start, can we use your books?
That's the hope. That is the hope.
Okay.
That we have books that are available for parents and teachers and kids and anybody who might want to have access to them.
And I have to clarify the context. These are parents who do not have a command of the Chupik language, and they've asked us to help them by putting together one immersion class in which elders and teachers of the Chupik language can work with the parents, and the books will be really helpful because the parents know English, they're literate in English, they'll hear the Chupik sound, and there are the pictures, and they're going to learn the language. They can then support their children, because right now what's happening is that the children know more Chupik than the parents. So we're going to complete the circle, and this is great. So thank you.
So I admit there's a lot of areas that could be improved, but I think at least from the start that we're providing some resources and hopefully some acknowledgement that this is an important piece for kids and families.
That looks like it's it. So if you could join me again thanking our speaker this afternoon.